You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
What is up, my friends? Hope you're out there just having the best possible day. My name is Sean Oshadi. I am joined by two of my favorites, the Prince of Positivity, the King in the North. He is Alexander K. Lee, and of course, the Legal Eagle, the Mouth from the South, Jed Meshew. Fellas, it's the beginning of July. Somehow this year is half over. I have no idea how, but somehow this year is half over. So you know it's time for some mid-year awards. First of all, just how are we doing today? Does it feel like this first half of the year is blown by for you guys? Because it really feels like it for me.
What happened to June? Where did June go? Was there a June? Did June only exist in theory? I swear, it's July already, which is great. I love summer. I love July just as much as June, but I felt like the month just passed by. You know why, guys? You know why it passed by? Probably because we got so much UFC, because we've had delightful UFC cards every weekend to talk about. So who can complain? You know, and really, that's true for most of the half year. We had some great stories. We had some pretty good fights. I guess that's up for debate. We'll see how people agree with us. But yeah, listen, when you have this much MMA content, guys, where does the time go?
I mean, when you are getting Sean Strickland versus Abus Magomedov every weekend, the time just flies. It just moves so quickly. And now it's America's birthday.
And Canada's
obviously very excited about. Is it Canada's birthday?
Is it Canada's?
I think that's what Canada is. I should know this. It is. It is Canada Day on the. It is Canada Day this weekend. Well, I don't know when this podcast is going out, but this weekend surrounding this podcast, it is Canada Day. So,
is Canada Day when you got your independence, like 20 years ago or something?
The anniversary of Canadian Confederation.
Okay. What day exactly is that, do you know?
July 1st.
July 1st.
Why did you answer it before you?
I said it's Uncle Canada's birthday.
I do know Canada Day is July 1st. I don't know when it was confederated. If you told me it was like 1965, I would believe you. I'd be like, that sounds right.
1867. 1867.
Good for Canada.
Damn right.
I also love that any Canadian listeners can't even get mad at us not knowing anything because you're Canadian, AK. You should know this.
I don't think we were independent. You know what? Shaheen, what's going on right now? What's going on with the show?
I think AK this isn't making the end of the show.
This isn't making it into the show anyway.
This is absolutely.
I mean, are we sure about that?
This is absolutely making it into the show. Just one quick behind the curtain note, because Jed, you already sort of mentioned it. We're actually taping this on Friday afternoon before UFC Vegas 76. So if Strickland versus Magomedov just ends up being the second coming of Lawler Condit, you know why we're not including it for our purposes here, just to let you guys know. But all right, fellas, let's get into it. Because I mean, here's what we've watched over the past 6 months. And this can either be, I don't know how you want to view this, but this is what we've watched. It might be depressing for some, but maybe not for others. 21 UFC events so far, 8 Bellator events, 6 PFL events proper, and then a handful more when you look at one championship, Ryzen, et cetera.
BKFC. It's,
BKFC, can't not include them as well. When you look at all that, and you sort of, we've been, you know, in talking about doing this podcast, we were looking at sort of the best of the past 6 months. What letter grade would you give the first half of 2023? A plus, B, C minus? Like, where are we going with this? How do you feel like the action that you have watched so far? Because we have all consumed a lot of MMA. And I'm guessing the people who are listening to this podcast have consumed a lot of MMA. Where are you going with it? How do you feel about it?
I'd love to hear Jed's grade first. Unless, Jed, you prefer to defer.
Oh, no, I'm happy to give it. No, I'm happy to give the grade. I also, before I just briefly want to say, I looked this up so we can continue to provide our readers with great information. Canada became completely sovereign in 1982. So way to go, guys. You're working on 40 full years.
Is that real? Are you messing with me, or is that
that's
real?
What Wikipedia says. Listen,
yeah, Canada Day is not it's not our birthday technically, but it's an important day.
Hold on.
Wikipedia's entry on it is amazing.
They're not the same. That's not a July 1st. That's not what we're celebrating on July. What Jed just said is not what we're celebrating on July 1st. That's not what we're
celebrating. I have a follow-up question though. What was Canada in 1980? What did it belong to somebody?
It was still English, buddy. Why do you think the Queen's still on the money?
I genuinely lived all of my life without knowing that.
No, they've largely been an independent, according to Wikipedia.
I was born in 84, so I've been an independent Canadian from day one. All right, so.
Not from day one.
What'd you say? Oh, 86.
You have been. Oh, yeah. It was 82.
Born free,
you
baby. AK was born free.
I was born free.
Born free.
Not under the yoke of the British.
But yeah, apparently they largely were autonomous.
Grade the year.
In 82, they got it.
All sorts of things.
Grade the mid-year.
If you listeners out there, maybe you can understand why I'm talking about Canada, because this year's been pretty mid. Look, we've had some highs. We've undeniably had some big moments we'll talk about for the history of the sport. John Jones's return, Alexa Grasso's big win. But there's just been a lot of other stuff happening that doesn't feel like it's this monumental tie, you know, shifting thing. It doesn't feel, at least right now, like this is going to be a year we look back on in 10 years and say, man, that's 05, you know, that's Shogun's run or anything like that. This is just kind of a year. I'm going to go C plus, just because there are a couple of very bright moments that give it a little bit of a boost. So we're not failing, but we're not getting B's here for sure.
C. Wow. Okay. Setting the bar. Very, very average. What do you think, AK?
I'm the Prince of Positivity. As soon as Jed said there's definitely no Bs, I'm like, I don't know. I'm willing to go as high as a B. Certainly no higher. If someone were to tell me B+, I would question it. If someone were to go anywhere in the A range, I would think they're maybe crazy. Or without sounding condescending, they're a newer fan to MMA, which is also possible. Because I think Jed frames it the right way is, what are we going to remember from this year so far? I do think there's moments that will stand the test of time. I think we're going to get to them without giving away too much. I think we're going to get to them on today's show. I'm definitely willing to say that 2023 has not been devoid of memorable moments. I think there's been some good stuff. I also think it's not more fun, but it's a more like, It's an easier time than ever, I feel like, to be an MMA fan. And some people might disagree because of all the UFC cards, but I think that's only if you feel obligated to watch every UFC fight night, which I think if you're an average fight fan, you don't have to. You really don't have to. We do. It's our job. People have heard us in the preview shows. We harp about it all the time. Our energy levels, let's be honest, aren't always there for UFC Vegas 70 whatever.
No, that's crazy.
I'm sorry to peel the curtain back for people or angels, but if you're able to, like, if you're just a fan and able to watch whatever you want, it's just great. You have so many options. Even beyond Bellator, beyond UFC, beyond, you know, the mainstream stuff. Like you could go on YouTube and watch Czech Republic. If you want to just watch Czech Republic MMA, that's like free on YouTube every weekend. They have their own league. They have great highlights. They have good fighters that will probably be, you know, on a better platform someday. So like, it's kind of cool that we are in this age, and this isn't exclusive to 2023. Obviously this has been probably the trend of the, you know, trending for the last few years, but I count that as part of 2023. Cause I do feel like I want to believe people are becoming more aware that there's like life outside the UFC. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's still so heliocentric around like, you know, North American promotions. But I do like that there's options, and I think people are get excited about stuff outside of the big three, four promotions, whatever they may be. So that's really where the B is coming from. I think if we're just talking about like North American, you know, what North American and the most watched promotions have given us, I'm probably leaning a little more in Jed's direction. Maybe not below B minus, but I get what Jed's saying.
So you're giving it a solid B. Jed, you gave it
a solid, a generous B. A generous B. I don't know if it's solid, it's generous.
No, I'm a C to C plus. I think maybe closer to C plus, because Bellator did have a pretty good start to the year. But I mean, ultimately, the biggest story this year is not a fight. It has nothing to do with Cage. It's Francis Ngannou and PFL. And if the biggest story is not a fight, it feels like maybe it's been a pretty mid-year of fights, you know?
I would push back on that potentially John Jones coming back and sort of doing this thing that he had been talking about for 13 years. That's probably as big of a story as the Francis situation. But I think I sort of split the middle between you guys, because both very on brand. I respect it. I love it. AK going high, Jed going low. I think I go right in the middle. I give it like a B minus. It certainly isn't a year that I, so far at least, that I would be, you know, bouncing my grandkids on my knee, telling them about 2023, the first half of 2023, and how spectacular it was. But I do think there were some highs, and some and those highs were very high, right? Like, and we'll get into it here shortly. And also, I will say, it seems like the next 6 months is set up to potentially bump that grade up decently. Like, we have some pretty, if everything plays out the way that we feel it could, and a lot of that is still question marks, we could be talking about this year in much higher regard by the end of it. Would you agree with that?
So if we're doing this show after fight week, International Fight Week, it's certainly a boost, because the two title fights on that are sensational. And I mean, then we've got Poirier Gaethje. There are some high water marks coming up. But I'll be honest, part of the downfall for me, and I, you know, can't speak for anybody else, part of the reason it's hard for me to ever envision a year being an A-plus year anymore is just simply the oversaturation of it. There is simply so much of it. Like, yeah, Volk Rodriguez is awesome. Moreno Pants is awesome. Poirier Gaethje is awesome. Even Aspinall returning is like really cool. But we're also going to be getting, you know, Holly Holm, Rio Bueno Silva. We're going to be getting a Bellator car headlined by Logan friggin' Storley. Like, there's just going to be a bunch of the good moments, but then just so much in the middle, just such a wall of sound at us that it brings everything lower. The highs stand out, but everything sort of has this patina of meh for me. And I think that that's sort of the reality we live in, and it will be tough for me ever to kind of get past that, I think, at this stage.
How far back do you have to go to find an A-plus year in MMA?
Off the top of my head, 2016 sort of jumps out off the top of my head.
The rise of McGregor.
Or 2015. Some of the golden era sort of right there, the McGregor-Rousey.
Anything in the early 2010s was awesome. When I did the rookie class ranking in there, and anything in that stretch from like 2011 to 2017, most of those years were really good damn good. You had the influx of talent coming from Strikeforce, coming from WBC. You had women coming into the UFC. You had all this sort of vibrant, exciting times. And now the sport's too big now for that to really happen unless the UFC acquires, you know, Bellator or whatever. That would be sick. Like, that would be an awesome year if that ever happened, frankly.
That would not be sick for fighters' paychecks, but it would be helpful for better events.
Look,
certainly.
The fighters don't care about their paychecks, so whatever. I've stopped fighting that battle. They are okay making pennies. I can't care enough for them. That's just how life's got to be.
You know what's crazy? And I don't want to get into the whole tangent, but it's not even just that they don't care. It's like they're aggressively angry when you try and advocate for them. Like, they come after you. Like, how dare you tell me I'm not getting paid enough? You don't know. It's like, okay, all right, cool.
Just a quick look. I think 2016 is the last year that I would be like, was hot fire.
Two Diaz McGregor fights.
I think there's probably a year that we're missing in between then. Oh, because that's about 7 years in between. Yeah, I feel like there was a year in between
was
that
pretty good.
I remember being very good. But either way, I think we are all sort of talking around the same area, right? C plus, B, B minus. That we feel like we're in the same range. But that being said, I do think the highs, as we've said, were very high. There are already a couple notable, very notable things that we will remember by the time the year ends, several years from now. And I'm sure we'll get more as the year goes on. So let's sort of go through these categories that we have laid out in front of us. You know how they go. They're the very basic categories: fighter of the year, submission, knockout, and fight. And we're just going to talk through some of the biggest moments so far the first 6 months. And so let's start with fight of the year, because to me, fight of the year is usually the ultimate judger of the year, right? If you have 20 fight of the year contenders, it's been a very good year. If you have a few, maybe not so. For this podcast, I came up with three that I feel really good about that we will still be talking about probably by the end of the year.
Ooh,
give me some pushback really if you feel like there's less or more. I'm happy to hear either way.
But I am shocked to hear this already, so I'm excited. I have one fight that like truly stands out as an all-timer this year, and some others that are good.
I have a feeling we have the same one. So I think all of us would probably agree that Makhachev Volkanovski is the fight of the half year so far. Would you guys agree with that?
Absolutely. Undeniably, that's a fight that we will talk about for years to come. That is, I'll be fairly surprised if that doesn't win fight of the year, barring some truly epic shit from
Poirier. We got Poirier Gaethje coming up, yeah.
But the stakes are even different. Like, that fight has to elevate even higher because the stakes aren't the same as they were for Makhachev Volk. Like, that is such an important, and for me, fight of the year, I say this every year when we do these things, these awards are almost always for me about a nexus between importance and awesomeness, because like for KO and sub, there are just way cooler things that happen on the regional circuit of MMA. Like there are way more exciting fights that happen in Czechoslovakia, YouTube fights or whatever, but they don't mean as much. So they aren't the fight of the year. They're not the things we talk about. Poirier Gaethje is probably going to be insane, but it has a high degree of difficulty to catch up to just what Makhachev Volk meant as a fight for the sport and the history.
How dare you disrespect the BMF title? How the vacant BMF title? How dare you?
It wasn't Makhachev and Volkanov. It wasn't like a balls to the wall like action fight. It was like, but every moment was so tense.
Tension.
It was a roller coaster
and real tension, like real tension. Not
there's
like
a story.
Yeah, not like
ebbs and flows. Great fight.
Not like like Ngannou, like Lewis, where there was tension just because you're waiting for something to happen and you're hoping to God someone would get knocked out. This was like you really believed. Just you know, if you've seen Volkanovski fight before, if you've seen Makhachev fight before, if you're familiar with their resumes, like you really believed like either guy at any moment was gonna take the advantage, was gonna impose their will and take the advantage. And I'm sure there was moments where they thought they were going to too, and then they were sort of, the other guy would counter or make an adjustment and just prevent that from happening. It was a beautiful thing. I even think I made that caveat of if you've seen these guys fight before, because I even think if this was the first time you'd see these guys fight and you're at least a somewhat like a casual fight fan, I think you'd still appreciate it. I think you'd still, there's still that sense that this is something enormous happening and that these two are, just from watching how they move, from watching how they, you know, how they exchange, you would know these are two of the best guys in the world fighting. Like, you would know. You might not know the level. You might not quite understand, like, the magnitude of it and, like, compare it to other good fights. But it had that. I really feel like it had a broad appeal to it. And I got to give credit to the UFC and Makhachev and Volkanovski for pulling the trigger and just making the fight happen. Because I think we all agree, sure, there's a cool world where Volkanovski racks up another couple title defenses, Makhachev racks up a couple title defenses. This was his first title defense, like before they fought. Great, you know, sure, that would have been cool too. It's an even bigger fight, but the fight game is so fickle that if you can just pull the trigger. And again, for the most part, people wanted it. It's not that Volkanovski and Makhachev don't have challengers, but most people had them number one, number two, pound for pound in some order. I know we did. And how often do you get to make that happen? So credit to everyone involved for just saying, let's just do this right now. It can happen.
The answer is like three times in history.
Yeah, yeah. It's rare.
The top 2 pound for pound fighters in the world have been within a weight class of each other to compete and did so.
Yeah, and
it's like the third time ever.
Yeah, and it played out that way. It was an exceedingly close fight. And it was controversial. I think the score, some people say the score is controversial, but I think in a good way, not in the kind of way that like annoys me, where people are like, oh, this is just like such a blatant robbery. Like, I know some people did call it that, but like, I like the discussion argument around the fight. I think like this discussion around criteria. What do you value more? Jed, you and I have joked about what the people want Makhachev to get super back control or something. And but I enjoyed the discourse around it, which isn't always the case with these big fights that end.
He had super back control.
So
he had super back
control. So the build up was good. The fight itself was good. And I still feel like the discussion after and the possibility of them fighting again. I'm looking forward to it. Again, I don't know how soon I want that to happen, but it left me wanting more while also being a fantastic fight. So I don't know what else you can ask for from a contest like that.
I think that's the one thing that sticks with me most four months after the fact of just looking back on it. Cause we've Jed, you said it, you know, we've had one versus two before, not very often. It's a very special, very singular thing when it does happen, but we've had it a couple times before. And we've also just had a lot of champ versus champ fights, like especially in the last couple of years. Like it's just been something
those
that
are
we
much
seem
more
to get.
Common now.
Yeah. It's not very often. In fact, I would say it's exceedingly rare that any of those type of fights, the one versus two or the champ versus chance, actually deliver a very good fight, right? Like often it is a very either a one-sided fight or just kind of a bad fight. And yet this was easily, I think, not even in my opinion, just generally like accepted to be the best champ versus champ fight we've ever had. And it was the best version of one versus two just in terms of a pure in-cage action how it played out, right? Like this was, like we said, a roller coaster. This was rollicking. Like the momentum swings, it felt incredibly tense all the way through. And even just the fact that it does leave you with like, oh, you know, I thought Volk won, I thought Islam won, just that level of a debate, that shows you that that was that close of a fight and that competitive of a fight. And just, you know, coming away from it being, I think most people came away from that being more impressed by Volkanovski, who was the loser, rather than Islam, who was the winner, which again speaks to the tremendous just value of that fight, just in, from an in-cage perspective, that the loser was able to imprint such, you know, like a memory on people like that. Like, so I agree. I think this is going to be hard to beat, but also just the sheer fact that this delivered, not very often you could say that, man.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the future of entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
Very, very true. If you, frankly, if you're doing your own list and this isn't your number one, you're just wrong, man. Again, there's nothing else to say. This is, there is only one choice for one. And that's why I said to kick this section off, I was like, I don't really have this. This is the only one, like this is clearly number one for me. And it's the only one that's in that tier of, here's a fight we're going to think about in, you know, 20 years. Here's a fight in the next 3 years. If I'm looking back to 2023, that's the first fight I'll think of. Whereas there are other good fights, and we're going to talk about them next, but I'm excited to see who you have because I don't have anything that even, frankly, approaches this one in terms, in my regard.
Yeah, no, let me add, like, I feel like that's kind of also speaks to why we've been disappointed with, like, we've given such a rough letter grade to the rest of the year so far, because I'm almost sure, Shaheen, I'm almost sure I can quote you, like, after the Islam Makhachev Volkanovski fight, because this was, what, February? February. I think you said something. I think it was you. It might have been you or Jed or someone on our panel. It wasn't me, but said something effective like, that was such an amazing fight. And man, if that is not the fight of the year, like by the end of the year, like if we have any fights that top that, it's going to be a fantastic year. Well, no fights have topped it yet. So we haven't. It's been kind of mediocre.
We got six months to go.
Plenty of time.
We still have time. We don't even know what will be booked later.
True. But plenty of time.
Yeah. I began this segment by saying there were two others that stuck out to me. And I agree, Jed, that this is Islam Volk is on a tier one. It is by itself. And then I would say tier two is empty.
S tier. That's what the kids are saying these days.
S tier. Bang. Islam Volk. A tier. I would leave it empty right now. But I do think B tier, there's a couple that I would throw in. One, Rachmanov versus Jeff Neal. I feel like that still held up. That was exciting. Jeff Neal sort of performed better than I think a lot of people expected he would, and that was the test that we were waiting for Shavkat to get. It was just very exciting all the way through and a hell of a finish. And then also just the man who we've already mentioned a couple times, Justin Gaethje and Fiziev. I mean, that was a banger. I'll go back and watch that any day. Like, that was just a really fun fight, just like any Justin Gaethje fight was. It feels like the baseline for a Gaethje fight is like a B tier on this sort of fight of the year list, and that hit exactly with the baseline of what I would want from a Gaethje fight.
I got absolutely no issues with those as kind of that B tier of things. I would also, I'll throw out, and this is perhaps personal because I was watching this one cage side, and I don't really know how that felt live watching on TV, but Max Holloway, Arnold Allen was like the most tense thing I'd ever seen sitting cage side. It was a really damn good fight watching it from there. And just hearing the shots and the fight was a lot closer in person than I think it was on TV. So for me, that was a really good one.
That's a good shot.
I don't know if you guys felt the same watching it at home or not, but I definitely wanted to shout that one out as well.
I got to show some. Sorry, Shane, I don't think you mentioned this one. Chris Curtis and Calvin Gaslam.
No, that was also good.
Or I should say Calvin Gaslam.
Chris Curtis. Headbutt scene around the world by everyone except for... Whoever was refereeing.
It's unfortunate that so much of the discussion after, because I remember the night of, a lot of discussion was, man, Calvin's back and people were so great. Like, this is the Calvin we knew was still there. He's still young and still going to run. And then, like, unfortunately, Chris Curtis got a bit annoyed by the missed headbutt and went a bit of a social media rampage. I don't blame him. I would understand.
Be annoyed by that.
Exactly.
Too.
I don't blame him.
Torpedoed in the face by a skull,
but
small skull either.
That did overshadow, I think, some of the positive discourse. And then he got headbutted again in the Imavov fight, and now like people are almost forgetting what a great like battle that was with Gaslam. And you mentioned things being personal. Jed, this one was personal for me because I took a lot of crap for the longest time for keeping Gaslam in my rankings. I did take him out before this. He I think by the time he finally got an actual win, I'd at least had him out for a few months. But I after he won that fight, I'm like, I feel somewhat justified in having him hang around a long time because we know what a skilled guy he is. There's just always been circumstances around his not reaching his potential, whether it's competing in the wrong weight class or losing a weird split decision to Darren Till, or just fighting guys who are better than him. Like, that's why I didn't want to drop him. Like, I was just like, oh, he's losing to Robert Whittaker and Jack Herb. Like, good guys, losing to good guys. So it was nice. It was nice to see a vintage Gaslam performance and a great back and forth fight, but one that like I knew Calvin Gaslam still had in him and has me very excited for what he has going forward, even though he's facing a killer in Shavkat and fingers crossed, making that cut down to 170 again.
I'm very intrigued by the welterweight thing just to see, because like we've done this so many times with Kelvin, but it's been a while. We've had a nice like couple year break here between the last welterweight attempt. So I'm curious to see whether it works out for him. Let's move on though. We got a couple other categories here. This next one is Fighter of the Year, which is almost like the MVP race, right? Like halfway through the NBA season, there's always the half year check-in to see who's leading the MVP race. It's a little harder for us because 6 months isn't a lot of time. So there's a very limited amount of high tier fighters who have competed more than once. I think you can find people who have competed more than once. And shout out to Gilbert Burns, already three so far in 2023. Man's just rolling through it, 2-1 in those three. If he had beaten
Bilal Muhammad, yeah, he would be my fighter of the year at this point. No question asked.
You took the words right out of my mouth. If you're 3-0 by June, you're snapping that up. Also, I'll shout out Johnny Walker and Brendan Allen, both of whom, also Jailton Almeida as well. So how could I forget Jailton?
Of course.
All of whom, 2-0. But so far, to me, it feels like this is probably a three-horse race by the end of the year, depending on sort of how these next results play out between Israel Adesanya, Alexa Grasso, and John Jones. And so I would throw it to you guys. Who do you feel like is sort of the front runner right now with what they've already done, but also sort of what's ahead?
Couldn't disagree more, so I'm going to let AK respond to you
before I come in
over the top with different arguments.
Listen, I'm all in on that Israel Adesanya finally, you know, conquering Alex Pereira. I mean, I've just got to give him the nod right now. Like, I give him so much credit for the way he handled the loss. The loss was at what, December, right? That was December, end of last year, December? November,
maybe? No, I think it was October, maybe.
October. Anyway, end of last quarter. Yeah, last quarter of last year. Loses again, technically, for the third time to this guy. You know, first time in MMA, of course, first time in a UFC fight. But the whole narrative, we've gone over it ad nauseum. He just can't beat this guy. He can't beat him. And he lost. He didn't just lose. He lost in a way he'd lost before, which was he seemed to be leading the dance, and he gets knocked out, this time on an infinitely bigger stage. Because again, listen, the amount of people who saw that, let's just say in North America, who saw that first fight live is 1/100,000th of probably the amount of people that ended up watching their actual first MMA fight. So everything was magnified. And then I love that he went the MMA hour after. He said he would. He told Ariel he would. He's a man of his word. He just seemed to handle the loss really well, which wasn't super surprising given what we know about Izzy. He's pretty like self-confident and self-aware, which, you know, is good at times and bad at times, but has served him well. And then for him to, you know, of course, want to immediately get that rematch and be granted it and then take care of business so emphatically was just awesome to see. And I want to say he's going to have a strong case to finish as the fighter of the year. But yes, the whole, you know, presumably he's defending his title in Sydney, UFC 292, still waiting an opponent, and no one's really jumping up. I don't want to get Jed started because I know
there's a very good chance he doesn't defend that title at that event.
Oh, that's kind of
there's,
cool.
There's already rumors that they're not even doing it at a pay-per-view for Sydney anymore.
That very much might just turn into a fight night.
Brutal. Brutal. Well, hopefully he defends the title anyway, so before the end of the year. There's no reason he shouldn't. And in that sense, maybe the time it could work out to have a little more, one of the more intriguing challengers emerge. But just for that one win, again, like we said, there's other champions or people who became champions who just have that one win. And certainly we can have them on the list. But if I'm going number one right now, the most memorable, the fighter who did the most for their career, I'm going to give Izzy the nod here. It's close though. It's not like by a mile. It's close.
No, I mean, I think I'm with you. I've been kind of vacillating back and forth between him and Grasso. But I think I sort of land in the same place where just like you look at sort of the signature moment, the signature highlight of this year. And it is Izzy. It is Izzy knocking out Alex Pereira. Like there has been no moment that has been more memed. There's been no moment that has been in more fan edits, more fan videos, just been on TikTok and Instagram and whatever else in 80 different versions than that moment. Like we have seen that moment ad nauseum since it happened. And it just, what it meant professionally, personally, the emotion afterwards, beforehand, that whole fight week, just that whole storyline. It feels to me like that's sort of the signature story and highlight of the whole year so far. And so I would agree with you. I mean, I lean Izzy. I think he may have a tough road to sort of win fighter of the year, because I don't know that beating of Robert Whittaker for the third time will sort of be looked at as highly as maybe some other fights and wins that other guys and women will be able to get. But sort of at this 6 month check-in, I lean that way as well. But Grasso, I gave a lot of weight to. I almost sort of just pushed it her direction because again, that face crank. I will never get the image out of my head of sort of her, like the moment she releases it, and it almost just looks like Valentina has the world's worst sunburn with the different color tone, the white and red on her face from the pressure of that face crank. But I'm very curious to hear your opinion on this, Jed. You're sort of sitting here bemused by our whole conversation. Hit us. What do you got so far?
Well, I think your guys are almost all the way wrong about everything. Here's where I'll start.
Fair.
If we're looking at this as a projection of who will win fighter of the year, my votes are going to obviously be super wrong. You'll find out why in a moment. I would say that if that's what that's the kind of contours of the conversation, I think Izzy probably is the front runner to be fighter of the year at the end of the year, because if he does get one title defense, frankly, if it is over Robert Whittaker, I think that's a phenomenal year for him. He beats his nemesis, and then he beats the consensus second best dude, even though he already has two wins over him. doesn't matter. He gets another win. Maybe it's spectacular. I think he's the leader in the clubhouse. I say he's the leader in that because I do not personally believe John Jones will fight again this year. If John Jones fights Stipe Miocic and wins this year, this is not conversation. There's just no conversation to be had. John Jones is going to win Fighter of the Year if he gets one more fist fight this year.
I think you're right. Unless Alexa finishes Valentina twice, then I think she will have a very good case.
If Alexa Grasso does a spinning, flying triangle armbar, it will not matter if John Jones returns after a three-year layoff, becomes a two-division champion, and then goes and waxes Stipe in November. It just, the narrative will be too strong, regardless of the quality of win or whatever. John Jones will be your 2023 Fighter of the Year if he fights one more time. I just personally don't think that's going to happen. For me, for this, I chose to just look at it at the six-month mark. And so we're not talking about, you know, fighters we will necessarily remember forever, though maybe. For me, it was who did the most so far this year, who has been the most pound-for-pound, you know, dollar-for-dollar thrilling television to watch. And it's a man you mentioned, Jaheen. It's Jailton Almeida. Two fights up, two finishes, two performance bonuses. Nobody else is doing that. I had Brendan Allen on the short list. I had Ian Gary there as well. But for me, looking back at this, I kind of just wanted to give shout outs to the people who are out here grinding, who are putting in the work, getting big W's, and who won't be in the end of year conversation. I know for a fact, unless Jailton gets two more wins of this magnitude, he's not going to be in the top five. But I'm looking at them from that. The last thing I'll say on this, I think it's, you know, John and Izzy are two sort of the top horses right now. I would say that's only because of narrative, because nobody has mentioned him yet. Brandon Moreno is about to defend his title against Alejandro Pantoja. Lost to twice. He already has a dominant win in the tetralogy with Figgy Smalls. He beats Pants in July in a week from now, which I'm picking him to do. That's a hard-ass fight. If we did this show next week, Brandon Moreno wins, he is my Fighter of the Year at this moment in time, unquestionably. And he still has room to get a third fight in there against, I mean, it looks like Brandon Royval. If he has a year where he beats Figgy Smalls, Alejandro Pantoja, and Brandon Royval, people won't love it because, you know, flyweights never get the love. He will be my Fighter of the Year this year because I don't care if Leon Edwards comes back and beats, you know, Colby Covington or whatever, or Jamal Hill beats, we finally get a Yeary fight. The only person that would beat a Brandon Moreno for me in that scenario is maybe we can maybe have a conversation about Islam Makhachev if he goes out and dusts Oliveira again, because fight of the year win over Volk and smoking, you know, Charles Oliveira, one of the most exciting fighters of all time, former champion a second time. That's also a very good resume. But for me, I'm predicting Brandon Moreno for end of the year.
So three things. One, I mean, you're playing to the crowd right now. You're playing to the perfect audience with the Jailton Almeida pick. You know that AK and I love the Jailton Almeida pick. You will get no argument from me whatsoever about that man deserving anything.
The man hasn't been punched in 2023.
I love it.
And never will.
That is the future champion. I'm here for that. Two, I will say I am somewhat surprised by your complete dismissal of Grasso in this conversation for a couple of reasons. One, because A, you lost your entire bank account on that fight because you didn't see it coming.
I have a very good answer for this, by the way, but please continue.
You were so stunned by that account or so stunned by that result that you literally lost your entire bank account on it. Like that, absolutely. That to me plays a part of
it. You don't have to keep saying it, Shaheen.
I feel like I need a hammer at home. But also, like, you have been the number one Valentina Shevchenko stan in my life for like 3 or 4 years, talking about how good this woman is and how no one else stands a chance. And she just rises so far above the rest of the division. And she finally loses in like a really interesting, surprising, brutal way, and you're sort of just sweeping it under the rug. That to me is surprising, especially if Grasso does it again, like a lot of people who seem to upset the champion do. It consistently seems to happen again, unless you're Juliana Pena. and it's just 2-0 over Valentina, it's surprising to me for you to discount her in that respect. Number three, I think the Brandon Moreno shout is a great, great shout, because if you're 3-0 as a champion in a calendar year, you're probably fighter of the year. I would just say that.
I mean, you should be. Here's my response to the Grasso thing. It's a fair criticism, not here to say it's not. But I've been pretty firmly on the record for this since starting with MMA fighting, however many years ago that was. Tremendous accomplishment if she goes out and defends her title. She will be winning an award that we'll talk about in just a moment here from me. I don't give a ton of credence to beating the same fighter twice. I mean, it's not like a bad thing, but the year Max Holloway was the MMA fighting fighter of the year, I went hammer and tongs with people because Max just beat Jose Aldo twice. And as great as I think Jose Aldo is, beating the same fighter twice is not to me nearly as impressive as beating an array of fighters, no matter how good that guy is, because styles make fights. You have a guy's number, you have a guy's number. That's sort of just how it works in my head. If Grasso wins, tremendous accomplishment, nothing to take away from her, but that will probably get her in the top five because it's such an important thing, but it won't stack up to Izzy getting two wins.
This is a half-year check-in. This is a half-year check-in. So I'm just talking about today. Today is interesting.
And I thought you said all of my half-year people were dudes who won multiple fights.
Sure. Wait, I thought you said though Makhachev would love to. I thought you said Makhachev would get points if he beat Charles Oliveira.
Projection though. We're talking about right now today.
Right. Yeah, that's if he beats Oliveira. It's not beating a guy. It's just not beating the same person in the same year. Two wins over Valentina is an incredible accomplishment, but to me that will stack up less highly than, you know, Makhachev beating Volk and Oliveira, or Izzy beating Whitaker and Pereira, or the three that Moreno could have. If you were just telling me I got to just pick who are the fighters we're going to talk about the most at the half year, I think Grasso is probably number one or number two, frankly, from that win. But I wanted to give some shine to, you know, the Jailton Almeidas, the Brendan Allens, the people who are putting in work a lot and delivering great performances that should be memorable.
Understandable. What if Grasso snuck in another title defense in December?
If she gets another title defense in September.
She's defending in September.
I don't think she would. The problem is, if she's doing that, she's probably beating Erin Blanchfield.
Yeah.
And she,
then the discussion's over. Yeah.
If she puts two dubs on Valentina and then rolls up Blanchfield, I rescind my Moreno statement.
Right. We're talking about one of the greatest years happening. We've ever seen at that point.
I don't think that's happening. I think Erin Blanchfield is the champion without a title for the next year until she gets the chance.
I mean, you'll get no argument from me on that one, but let's keep it moving, because I think we're about to talk about Alexa Grasso a lot more. Submission of the year. This is really a one fight race for me. I mean, I you can throw out whatever honorable mentions you want, but Grasso over Shevchenko by face crank feels like the shoe-in winner. It's going to take something really tremendous to beat it. I mean, this is it, right? This is the lock of all the locks for the categories.
I wouldn't say it's the lock of all the locks, just because I think fight of the year is pretty much that same lock of all locks. But I think this is a clear number one. I have an honorable mention that I'm a particular fan of that in other years would have a great shot at it. But again, nexus of quality and importance. No more important moment has happened this year. There have been other equally important moments. No moment that is more important, more iconic. The image of Shevchenko red faced, the image of me looking live on MMAfighting.com, great website, as my dreams. Boop. It's too much. I think this is very, very, very likely to win this at the end of the year, and certainly gets it at the half year.
I was going to say I would almost say it's more of a lock than Makhachev Volkanovski's. I feel like we're going to get a high level fight. Not higher level in terms of skill, but high level. I don't know. High level fight in terms of excitement. Again, we're thinking about Dustin Gaethje too, and who knows what else gets booked. So I'd say the chance. But then I realized Oliveira is probably going to submit Makhachev in their rematch when that happens. Okay. So that will become the submission of the year. So definitely, I can't say this.
That, if Oliveira submits Makhachev, that is your submission.
That's
of
the new
year.
One. That's so absolutely. So I cannot. That's just it. That is going to happen. So I cannot say that this is a lock. Obviously,
stay on that train forever.
I'm not off yet.
But yeah, this is the number one. Shout out, honorable mention. I think for me, a pretty clear number two is Shavkat Rakhmonov, Jeff Neal, which got a little bit of love in the fight of the year combo. But just I loved everything about this because it looked for all the world like Jeff Neal is about to be the first guy to see the scorecards against Shavkat Rakhmonov. He's going to lose, but he's going to be the first guy who gets that moral victory. And then the last minute, Shavkat's like, nah, bro, here's a bulldog choke while we're standing against the fence. Get out of my cage. I love Shavkat Rakhmonov like my grown adult son. And he's the number two for me at the half year.
Give me any standing bulldog choke. It's just like by far one of the most viscerally brutal things to watch. Just somebody get dumped on the floor after a standing bulldog. It's rough.
I love it so much because people who don't know jack about fist fighting can look at that and be like, that sucks. Like you show somebody an armbar who like has no concept of fighting. It's like, I don't really know what's going on here. Like unless they can see the grimace of pain, like what's happening? Why is the fight over? That's weird. Everybody has a visceral understanding of that dude. Oof, that hurts, man. Don't want to be that guy. I love it so much.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, that's nasty. It's the kind of thing I think. And was Shavkat, he would have probably won a decision. It was a good fight. It was a great back and forth fight.
Neal gave him absolute hell. He would have won the third round. Would have won the decision pretty cleanly.
And
Neal was all but toasted.
Yeah,
eating a lot of work in that third. But
and that's what we like to see. We love to see fighters who listen. Winning decisions is great too. We're not saying every fighter who's going to be a contender, who's going to be a star, has to be this like killer knockout or submission machine or whatever. They don't have to be. But when you show you have that side of yourself, man, it makes you intrigued. And we're already talking about Shavkat a lot. Like we're already, you know, even before that, we're all predicting Shavkat as a future champion. At the very least, like it'd be shocking if he never fought for a title. Then he gets a great test in Neal. I think we all agree it was a great test. I think he was probably like a significant favorite, but you know, anyone who's watched Neal, the guy's been in fantastic form in the past few years. So it was so for him to not settle for like getting the scorecard. He's like, I want to put this away. I don't want to hear the judges. I don't want to hear that from
He hates judges.
He's judge averse.
He and Jailton Almeida just can't stand them.
No, they'd put judges out of work if they could. So yeah, it's great to see. Again, you really want to see someone who can just has that extra gear and says, I'm going to put this exclamation point on a performance. And it's not easy to do at the UFC level, for the most part, let me tell you. When you get to the level he's at, especially, and he certainly did the damn thing.
Well, let's move on. We have one more big four categories here left. And to me, this is the category that has the deepest amount of options so far in 2023.
Definitely this year.
Absolutely, right? Like firework display for the 4th of July, the knockout of the year. I can just throw out a bunch right now. I don't know if you guys have others, something that stands out to you outside of this list, but I would just throw
out. I think there's a very clear number one.
Well, I think
And I was about to say everything else is pretty good. Is also me, really good, but
Izzy Alex 2 is the clear number one, right? It's just the same as what I said for Fight of the Year. This the most memeable knockout so far we've gotten this year. You have seen the most fan edits, most different versions of this video, this clip, the celebration afterwards, everything that goes into it. I would also throw out though, Ismail Bonfim beating Terence McKitty with a flying knee, Lorenz Larkin beating Makhmedov Berkhamov with the standing elbow, Edson Barboza, Billy Q with the knee, Patchy Mix, Hafion Stotts with the knee. Lots of knee this year. This is the year of the knee. Sadibou C versus Shane Mitchell. We just saw that this past weekend with the spinning wheel kick. Also, the KSW punch from the bottom. I can't pronounce either of these gentlemen's names, but the punch from the bottom of Mount, that was one. And then there was also
Christoph
a really...
Kovacki. Stakovaki.
There you go.
Close enough.
And then one other that I would mention would be the standing elbow KO from the road to UFC. I cannot pronounce this gentleman's name who beat Han Sol Kim with the standing elbow, but tremendous stuff all around. Where would you guys sort of land with this category? Do you agree Izzy Alex is the number one? And would you sort of, is there anything else you would throw in that?
I'm so tempted to make a case for my boy. Let me try this again. Kovacki. I'm going to say Christoph. My boy Christoph, because I just had never seen anything like that before, and I get it. It's a weirdo freak show fight. I don't know if they're both boxers. I know Christoph is a boxer. I can't remember his opponent was also a boxer. And again, that's the only the kind of knockout you're getting where you know one guy has that kind of great punching power, and the other guy is probably not a super high level mixed martial artist either. I'm struggling because, you know, we do cover a lot of regional stuff when we get the chance. And like, I don't think I've ever seen knockout from the bottom. We've, of course, seen.
Uriah Hall had one on Tough.
From the bottom. Oh,
Dylan Andrews.
With like, he was using elbows and stuff.
He was in the bottom of guard though.
I don't think he was mounted. Yeah. I don't think he was mounted.
Remember. It's been a while.
I think he had guard because we've seen very rarely KOs from full guard, mm-hmm. which are like still impressive.
And that's was one of the things that was created that sort of mystique around Uriah, obviously. And then also the Adam Cella, the spin kick of death. And thank God I'm only saying that figuratively. Adam Cella, I think, did fight again after that. Fortunately, or maybe it's not a good thing he fought again. Anyway, but yeah, I just never seen this before. We've seen Alexei Olenek, you know, submit people from being mounted, right? That's his whole deal. The Ezekiel choke, right? But a knockout, like a clear KO, was so cool. So we have to take stakes into account. It really can't be number one. When I think of the first half of 2023, regardless of just knockout, the most exciting moment for me was Izzy pulling that off and finally getting that W, and then the celebration. And again, mileage may vary with these things. I love that kind of spectacle. And it just added to what was already, like, again, one of the best finishes, I think, in a UFC title fight, and definitely the best KO of the half year so far.
Well, in particular, right, you look at the context of that whole sequence up until the moment that Izzy actually lands the knockout punch. It looked like history was repeating itself all over again, right? Like, it looked like Alex was about to do the damn thing once again. And then it's just like the way we talk about Izzy forever for the rest of all of our lives is so vastly different than the reality we now live in. But he pulled it off. I agree with you.
Yeah, it's the most... Arguably, it's like one of the five most meaningful knockouts of all time. If you consider what the inverse is, like, I mean, just think about what happens if he loses, like, right? Because he's against the fence. I know that Izzy says he was playing possum. I just don't buy it, frankly. That just feels like a thing that fighters say. He was kind of getting moved around the cage in pretty bad ways in that fight.
Light kicks had done their damage too. They had added up.
Absolutely. And like, he's, maybe he wasn't as badly hurt or whatever, but regardless, if he doesn't score that knockout, that fight is trending in a very poor direction for him, certainly. And if he loses, and we're talking about a guy who's the second greatest middleweight in UFC history, I think after the loss to Pereira, he probably can't really ever climb Mount Anderson Silva at this point in time, but he loses that and now it's what's happening to him. This guy, he has been vexed by Alex Pereira his entire combat sports career. Where does he go? Does he move to 205? It's the the pair, like the sliding doors moment of that KO is one that I think will resonate for years to come of what could have been. So one of the most important knockouts, certainly in recent UFC history, I think, and undeniably the one. But AK, I love the Christoph Glowacki fight. I think that that is one that I will certainly have in my list at the end of the year because it is so unique. I mean, there, I genuinely don't know if you've ever seen. I feel like I've seen some things close to that, but not the same. And so I know it's happened before because I perused around the internet when it did, but it's so unique and rare that it's a unicorn. It deserves at least to be lauded as such, even
and
though
it happened
it's
at
ridiculous.
A big show. It happened at a big show. Right? Obviously, not a big, not a big fight with big stakes, but at a massive show.
But yeah, so it deserves to be lauded as such. And then the rest of them that were mentioned, all great. But for me, the one I really want to give shine to is Patchy Mix on Howfi and Stotts, just because
tremendous.
I mean, I didn't know Mix could do that. I didn't know that was. I thought Mix was just he just grappled some peoples, and then he just colded, because that's the big part on also for KOs on me outside. You know, it's want it to be important. I want the aesthetics to be awesome. Like, mm-hmm. I think the greatest knockout in mixed martial arts history, as far as I'm concerned, is Francis on Alistair Overeem, because it didn't matter. And it's just the coolest shit you've ever seen in your life.
The photo, like the photo of his head popping off like a champagne cork.
I mean, I could just rewatch a loop of that boop, boop, boop over it. It's unbelievable. And you get that with the Mix Stotts things. I mean, he just goes flatline down. Izzy's also his flatline, but it's like a combination of punches that does it. So maybe that docks like a half point from the total. The mixed one is pure and clean, and it meant so much to Bellator and, frankly, to the non-UFC bantamweight division and where we go from here. It's an honorable mention for me, even if it's not the one.
Can I just
really quickly, one aspect of what you just said rings so true, and I hadn't thought about it, but it's 100% right. I didn't know you could do that. Element of a
knockout.
It's
the same Umar Nurmagomedov thing.
Yeah. If you can walk away being like, wow, I did not know he could do that. That is adds such a fun element to any of these. And that's a great point.
You MFers better have Patchy Mix ranked above Henry Cejudo when those rankings come. I'm sorry. We haven't done a ranking show in a bit. Guys, I apologize. I'm getting a little bit antsy. But you guys better have him ranked above Henry Cejudo. Otherwise, we're going to have a problem. We are going to have a problem if I don't see that name above Henry Cejudo going forward. I'll check real quick. Oh, okay. Hold on. Jet moving names now. He's in the doc moving names now. He's in our shared doc.
We haven't done anything on it. We haven't done a ranking show in like a year.
Listen, I already had, people know, I don't want to get into this whole thing, but I already had Patchy Mix well ahead of Henry Cejudo because Henry Cejudo wasn't in there. I hope that this is the case. If I see anyone rank Henry Cejudo above Patchy Mix after that spectacular knockout, knockout, I will be very upset. And
I kind of probably bump Sergio up.
May have to have some people kicked off the panel. I'm just saying, if I see that.
I will say, I'm glad you gave shout out to Patchy. I want to give also a special shout out to another Bellator guy who I'm very much predicting is not going to be on anybody's list by the end of the year, but should be. Lorenz Larkin's standing elbow knockout of Burkhamov was
pretty cool.
Incredibly brutal. And I just called this the year of the knee. It's also kind of the year of the standing elbow because we're getting a lot of these. And I just love the aesthetic nature. You're talking about the aesthetics. The aesthetics of Larkin's right there was just sensational. And I've always loved Lorenz. He's always been sort of an underdog dark horse guy in this division that people forget about. That was a nice reintroduction, I think, for a lot of people. Like, oh yeah, this guy's been around. He's been really good for a long time. He left the UFC as like sort of a top eight, top seven guy in this division, and then completely got forgotten about. So I really appreciate Lorenz sort of reemerging in this sense that like he did last year.
There was a little story there too, because the first fight with Burkhamov.
You just went through like five versions of it.
Which one is it?
The third one.
Burkhamov.
I don't know. Just whichever one.
Help me. This was a rematch because the first fight had ended in it was eye poke, I think. Eye poke or groin strike. It was a no contest.
Don't recall.
You guys don't even remember this. Well, there was, well, to add to Shane's point, yes, it's always nice when people have a rematch when the first fight, you know, ended in unsatisfying no contest, something like that. And it's ended in such emphatic fashion. And he was, I believe, an underdog in the first matchup because his opponent has this crazy, like what, like 24 and something record, right? He's got this, you know, one of those loaded, I'm not entirely sure who they're fighting, but certainly looks impressive records. And Mukhamed Berkhamov, thank you. 15 and 1 when he ran into Lorenz Larkin. So a lot of people assumed that he'd take the advantage. Oh, I'm sorry, I had to look it up here. Elbow to the back of the head is how the first ended. And then poetically, a proper elbow to the front of the face ended the second fight. So yeah, it's aesthetically pleasing, a little bit of a storyline in there, and a really, really, really big win for Larkin.
Anything else you guys want to mention that we haven't mentioned so far before we get out of here? It's been, again, a very, I think, interesting year, up and down, a lot of events, some good, some not so good. We've had some highs, as we've talked about, some lows as well. Anything that we haven't mentioned so far before we get out of here that you want to mention?
I'm just going to throw this out there because I think it's still the funniest thing that's happened this year. And it's from our great friends in BKFC, who have leaned all the way into Mike Perry, which, look, if you're going to lean into a particular niche of MMA, the Mike Perry one, you could do a lot worse. And Mike Perry, one, there are so many good quotes from Mike Perry on the build-up to his fight with Luke Rockhold at BKFC 41, I think. The one that I'm going to say is obviously the, "You're the booger man now," after putting a booger on Luke Rockhold. This is the most infantile, incredibly funny thing, and it still makes me giggle to this day. But a quick shout out to, in the same interview, Mike Perry, when Luke Rockhold's talking about like what he's gonna do to him, and "You don't know, you've never seen anybody like me, bro. Like I've got the tools." And Mike Perry just looks at him and goes, "It's a left or a right. It's not that confusing. It's a left or a right hand. Footwork, some head movement. You're a southpaw. I'm orthodox. You're range. I'm an inside fighter. It's not that confusing, bro." It's just the most incredible Mike Perry response to Luke Rockhold trying to be like, "I'm going to show you things. Like, it's boxing, man. We're just going to hit each other. It's not that hard."
Just still A plus efficiency.
Yeah.
A plus a economy of words there, Mike, just getting across exactly what he needs.
It's a left or right. It's not that confusing. It's such an unbelievably cold ether.
Verbal KO of the year for Mike Perry. Then he wins the actual fight and pretty brutalizes Rockhold. Yeah, brutalizes him. And then has to face off McGregor. So, I mean, that's the best week for a fight.
Maybe Mike Perry fighter of the year. We missed out here.
I'm no fan of Mike Perry at all personally, but boy, if we're talking about who is one of the most talked about fighters of the first 6 months,
had a big year.
He's has to be top three. I
and
think,
he set himself
right?
up for a massive raise.
Yes. And I'm including like thinking about Izzy, thinking about John Jones, thinking about Alexa Grasso. I would comfortably slot him in there as far as people, like if we're just talking about who fight fans were talking about, who would be like actually talking about social media impressions, whatever you want to, he's in there somewhere. I think he's in that top three. I think he not bumps one of those names out of the top three. He was so, his popularity just boomed with the BKFC, that 1 week with BKFC. It was incredible.
Absolutely true. I just got to add this in because I forgot, like I'm pulled up the article now so I could have that quote on the Boogerman quote. this maybe is just an award for how absolutely clueless Luke Rockhold is, really, because further down in their like conversation, Rockhold asks, and I quote, "Who the F has ever put me out with one shot, Mike?" "Yoel Romero," Perry quickly replied. Then there's a whole nother statement from Luke Rockhold's like justifying it. And Perry jumps in, "Michael Bisping, his left hand." You can't say stuff like "who's ever put me out with one shot" when there's a laundry list of people who have done that.
Yeah,
I loved everything about BKFC 41 is really what I'm trying to get at.
Give me BKFC 41 fight week over again and again and again.
"Who's ever put me out with one shot, Mike?" "Yoel Romero," "Michael Bisping," "Jan Blachowicz." "Do I need to keep going?" Incredible. That's all I got. That's the only thing I need to talk about. This is more BKFC in our lives.
Real quick, before we get out of here, because this has been sticking with me since that whole thing went down, and I still don't know the right answer, but I know which side of the fence I fall on. When it comes to the Boogerman debate, are you team one word or team two words? Is it Boogerman with no space, or is there a space between Booger? I'm very clear one word. That's gotta be one word. Like a superhero.
It's like Boogeyman, but Boogerman. Boogeyman would be one word. Boogeyman or Booger Woman would be one word.
It's just like Superman. Superman's one word. Boogerman is one word.
Now, here's my counter to that, because I think I'm the other one. Yes, Boogeyman is one word. Superman's one word. I'm Your Boogeyman by Casey and the Sunshine Band. Two words.
No.
And I feel like that's really where I'm not coming from the Boogeyman thing. I'm coming from the Booger Man. I'm Your Boogeyman.
See, I just really like him anointing him as almost this superhero-esque figure.
Do what you want. I just really want to listen to Casey and the Sunshine Band.
I'll say respectfully, I don't go to Casey and the Sunshine Band for my grammatical answers.
Oh, I use.
I just made a lot of people angry. A lot of those got super angry with me. I shouldn't have. I'm sorry. We're trying to end a positive note here. I just angered a huge, huge set of our fans.
Our producer Casey probably supports not going to Casey and the Sunshine Band since they don't spell it the same.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. Let's go listen to Casey and the Sunshine Band. This has been the half year check-in for MMA Fighting. We appreciate y'all for joining us. As always, that man is Jed Meshew. That man is Alexander K. Lee. I'm Ashaun Al-Shadi. It's been a fun half year so far. Let's hope the second half of the year gives us a lot more to talk about. I'm sure it will. In the meantime, keep it locked to this wonderful website, this wonderful podcast network, and we will be back with you soon. Enjoy the fights.
Love y'all.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prof G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the future of entrepreneurship, a Prof G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prof G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this show comes from Fundrise. Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes, and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/fox. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.